Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Matt.
Hey, Matt. And this week on the weekly, so Call of Duty Kickstarter for their board game. We'll find out why they're doing that. The final Orc license has been released and filed with the Library of Congress. Pendragon starter set from Chaosium and Buttons and Bugs. So we'll check in with the Grand Festival for Gloomhaven. So let's get started with the Call of Duty board game. So this was a little bit odd. This is I avoid or just kind of skip over a lot of these licensed IP board games that are mostly video games. You know, there's a lot of video game adaptions, but this one stood out because they immediately in this interview said, you know, Call of Duty is a multi-billion-dollar franchise. Just Modern Warfare alone grossed over like $2 billion for Activision. I guess it's Microsoft now, Activision, Microsoft. But it's a crazy successful franchise as far as, you know, video games. So if you're going to license this, why are you taking it to a crowdfunding platform? You're going to give Kickstarter 10% of the millions you're going to generate. And what's the thinking? So the company is Arcane Wonders. So Arcane Wonders is who's going to produce this. They previously have done Mage Wars Arena and Mage Wars Academy are their previous games. And when asking the president, Robert Geislinger, why would you need to do this? You know, this is a this is not an IP that needs you need to test the waters for. It definitely has a built-in audience. And he said, the short answer is that Activision is not making this board game. So we're paying Activision for the rights to use Call of Duty in this board game. And bluntly, we've already paid a lot for that privilege. So there's a big upfront that they're trying to make sure doesn't kill their studio, I think. So at the end of the day, we're third-party licensees. It's pretty standard. We saw that with Apex Legends, and now we've seen it with Elder Scrolls. So we're in the board game world, and most of us are small companies. So when you're looking at something like the Call of Duty IP, the game might sell 10,000 copies. The game might sell 100,000 copies, but we don't know what it's going to sell, so it's hard for us to even gauge that upfront without doing something like a Kickstarter. So, yeah, basically saying Activision is not involved. And the thing that they stress as well is they want the game to represent Call of Duty. But at the end of the day, Arcane Wonders is making this game, you know, themselves. They're the one making the game. And for a project of this scope, for us to make a game at that level we want to make it at, we really need to go to Kickstarter. And basically what they're saying is, we're getting no input from Activision. Like, this license gives us total creative freedom. We don't have to, you know, every single illustration, every single mechanic doesn't have to be run by them. There's not going to be an approval process because of the terms of the license. They're only getting some help, they said, with graphics. So they're getting, you know, graphical support, maybe things that have already been produced for the franchise. So that's why. So they're having to pay a big price up front. They can't for sure say what it's going to sell. And because they've already sunken so much into this project and want the creative freedom, they're paying the big price. So what do you think? Is that a valid argument?
It is. Mm-hmm. And it's, wow, refreshing bit of honesty.
Yeah, yeah.
From a game company. Like,
that's true.
Props to Arcane Wonders. I mean, they're not a huge company. Mm-hmm. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they got eaten by Asmodee or Embracer.
I don't think so.
They had a big splash with Mage Wars originally. Mm-hmm. And I played that actually quite a bit back in the day. But they don't pump out titles. Mm-hmm. Like, so they're not huge, and that's extremely cool that they're being honest about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if the license is what they're saying, that they basically can do what they want to do, that impresses me. Like, I'm really?
Yeah, yeah.
Activision is not exactly known as a very benevolent corporation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's true. You know?
Like, very true. So that's pretty cool. Maybe they just don't care because it's board game,
right?
So,
yeah,
it's a little off the radar.
Yeah, 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 so they mentioned that this is going to give Arcane Wonders the kind of complete financial control over the project. And I think that's probably when you're dealing with revisions and approvals for a license, that's where production time and bloat can happen. Because if you need to do revisions, just because some executive said, I don't like this blue line on this on the uniform, so can you remove that in all the artwork? You know, that kind of stuff can run up your costs, run up your production costs, and kind of affect your scheduling. So, you know, having that total, you know, final say and financial control will be interesting. So, yeah, I'm curious to see. And then they also mechanically can make a game that they think represents, you know, that play style, you know, what a first-person shooter or what a tactical, like a squad-based tactical board game could be like. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what they do. So they're going to do a collector's edition, of course, and there'll be a bundles for the base game. And it's going to be, the board game is going to be coming to market next year. And let's see if they gave us a date on the crowdfunding. I don't think there's a firm date on the crowdfunding yet, but it's coming. It's on the way.
Is it, what's the format? Like, is it just squad v squad kind of thing, or
I think so. Yeah, I think they're gonna. Because depending on the, you know, the time period and the type of game, I think they've gone to like smaller, like 5-man squads, or do like bigger. You know, Call of Duty has like a huge range. So yeah, they don't mention exactly what their approach is going to be and how they're theming it, like what they're going to actually be calling it. It's just Call of Duty the board game. So we don't know if that's World War II. We don't know if that's Modern Warfare. Yeah, so we'll have to see. Yeah, so yeah, interesting. So now we know. Now we know why you would take a big license like that to Kickstarter. And also, you know, we've also heard why you can't take certain licenses. Alchemy, the VTT, specifically said there were some licenses that Free League had that were forbidden for being taken to Kickstarter. So I think the Blade Runner, or no, not Blade Runner, what was one of the licenses that Free League had that said it couldn't be included in their Kickstarter offered as content because of the license with Free League.
That's so weird, because then they Free League themselves kickstarted Blade Runner.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, so it was maybe it was Alien then. So it was the one that didn't get kickstarted. So I think that was Alien that didn't, yeah. The one that went straight to retail. So they couldn't offer that content in their Kickstarter because I guess the license specifically says, you know, don't put us on crowdfunding.
I bet that, you know, I believe what they said about why they're kickstarting. I bet Activision charged them a bundle.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
For that license.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, because even those games, like there's not one studio producing those games. Those games are so big and the production values are pretty high. They have to have multiple studios actually, you know, working under Activision to finish those games.
They'll have a Battle Royale version of it with, I can't remember, what's the Call of Duty Battle Royale called? I'm blanking right now. Anyway.
Yeah.
Very popular.
Yes, yes. That's, you mean like Apex? The Apex Legends is Battle Royale. And yeah, a lot of the stuff. Yeah, a lot of, I'm not sure what they've
done. No, I mean more like the Fortnite model where it's everyone trying to stay alive and the map's getting smaller. Mm-hmm, isn't Apex more like Overwatch? Like on team?
Well, it's team. Yeah, it's team based, but they do have it is the battle royale with teams because it does have the kind of constricting. They did an interesting job with that mechanically. You have these little corners, and you know every so many turns they constrict, so your battlefield does shrink down. But yeah, Apex is team, but most of the there is every man for themselves, but there are also like, you know, 2v2, 3v3. In Battle Royale.
I never played Apex. I thought whenever it was explained to me, people explained to me more like Overwatch. So I just thought in those terms.
Yeah. Well, the way that the, it's a more like a hero shooter in the way that, each of the characters is very distinct, like their tactics and their abilities are very distinct. Yeah. The board game version of that was pretty impressive. Nick, who's Zombie Sashimi on Twitch, a mini painter, asked me to join a tabletop simulator version of that when they were beta testing it. And during the Kickstarter, they were beta testing and they were doing like live rules changes. So you had to like update the rules almost, you know, every other day before you're playing it because they're editing card text and everything. So they really did take advantage of playtesting during their campaign to finalize rules and kind of, you know, get the final balance on things. So
that's cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see how this goes. And that's a very new thing that I think has opened up. The Tabletopia and Tabletop Simulator do allow these companies to put digital assets online, say, here's the rule book in a PDF, here's digital versions of all the pieces, and go ahead and try the game. And, you know, they don't have to ship out a bunch of prototype copies with stickers and, you know, very temporary artwork and stuff. They can, you know, basically do digital assets and you can get a feel of the game before you, you know, put any money on it. So yeah, that's changed things a lot, I think. So we'll see if they end up doing that themselves. I'm not sure what, cause that's a lot of work. Also, you need a lot of tech support to handle something like that. So we'll see what Arcane Wonders does in those terms. So can you feel it? Can you feel the era of the OGL is over and the era of the orc has risen? So the Open Game RPG Creative License, that was a response to Wizards of the Coast's abandoned attempt to update their OGL, is now in the final version has been released. So things like Chaosium's basic roleplay universal game engine, Mythmere's games Swords and Wizardry, and Martin Muckraker's titles like Under a Hostile Sun will all use the orc. So the Paizo announcement says, the license is a system-agnostic, perpetual, and irrevocable open game license that provides a legal safe harbor for sharing rules, mechanics, so as to encourage collaboration and innovation in the tabletop space. As much commentary and after much commentary and iteration, the Orc license and accompanying acts, the answers and explanation document, are now final and ready to be used by game publishers large and small. So this was handled by Azura Law, and it's kind of a third party. But it's interesting, though, they were promoting them kind of as a neutral third party, but we'll find out they're not as neutral as you may think. And they also filed it with the United States Library of Congress. So it is out there. So they had a question and answer session recently, or that they will. Yeah, Gen Con hasn't happened yet. Gen Con. My dates are all screwed up. So at Gen Con. Oh no, on Saturday. Yeah, there will be an Orc license question and answer session. So it's a free to attend event, and they'll have the people speaking there will be Jeff Richard, Chaosium chair and founder, Marcus Plotz, the Ulysses Spiel owner and chair, Eric Mona, Paizo creative chief, Wolfgang Bauer, the Kobold Press founder and chair, and Brian E. Lewis, a Azura Law partner and Gen Con co-owner. So he worked on the legal architecture of the OGL, but yeah, so he is a founder, so yeah, I guess it's not a totally impartial law firm that they chose the owner of Gen Con to shepherd the license. So I'm not sure what effect that's necessarily going to have, but good luck getting your new 5e games into Gen Con. Yeah. So I wonder what that's gonna mean, but yeah, so it's out and it is a thing. So I'll put links to the final PDFs for both the Orc and the Axe, and then people are asking in the comments for this Paizo announcement if there's going to be a live stream or a video recording of this question and answer session that's going to be held at Gen Con. So we'll find out if that comes to pass or not.
I hope so, because nothing puts me to sleep faster than reading like technical
yes,
documents. Yeah. Right, like, right. Oh my God.
Yeah. The legalese of the orc.
Yes. I want a list of who signed Wizards. What did they change it to? SGL.
Oh yeah.
I want to know who signed that.
Yes, yes.
I bet those people don't want you to know that they signed that.
Right, right. Yes, just protecting their money. Yeah.
So, I've asked this question before, mm-hmm. so I apologize, but I'm still having trouble understanding what the benefit of this OGL is that embraces vastly different games systems.
Right.
I know the general wisdom is you don't copyright systems, but then what is the benefit of a BRP type game sharing its like legal biosphere with an old school D&D type game?
Right.
Like, I don't, what is the benefit, I guess, is
what yeah. I'm yeah. From the little bit that I've read on it, it does just seem like they're trying to, without one company kind of having the monopoly over it and basically pushing their system, they want to give that legal assurance that if you use these mechanics, no one's going to come after you. And I guess you can also offer things, you can decide like what's part of this. So things that you've come up with for your original world or setting or monsters or whatever could be offered under this license as well. So it kind of gives people, developers an option to, you know, share into this. But like Chris constantly is arguing, like, how is this much different from the Creative Commons licensing? Like, you have to be very detailed. You have to do more of the work yourself if you're going to do Creative Commons, because you have to spell everything out and write everything out yourself. You basically have to make your own license and then put it under Creative Commons. And I guess this is going to be a more community, like if they're considering all the non-Wizards of the Coast tier, you know, publishers are involved in this. This is going to be a way that they can share, you know, creatively what they're doing. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it gets, I mean, because they're calling it, you know, Safe Harbor and, you know, a irrevocable forever license. But you're right. It is going to be this huge, you know, range of system types and things that may not, you won't be picking and choosing from various mechanics to make a system. You're basically going to have so I'm sure the X will answer some of these questions. But it's just a response. It's just like circling the wagons against Wizards of the Coast. But it may not be it may not function in much of a different way than Creative Commons. So
I know this is something I should wait and see what they say, but if I produce a game product under this orc, right? Mm-hmm. Does that then make my game product fair game for other people to borrow from under the orc?
Mm.
If you know what I mean,
right? Like, I think as long as they're, you know, printing the text of that orc license, and then I guess whatever, because that's the thing that they have to do is with this license, you're not going to be giving away all of your, like, you know, character names and world building and everything under this orc, but so I guess it will, you will be determining what is and what isn't, you know, available to people. But yeah, I guess you know, people will then be able to kind of iterate on what you did. And
is it going to have that weird character? It's not going to have that. I assume it's not going to have that weird character creation clause that Wizards attempted, where your OGL product couldn't have character creation. You had to tell them go use the player's handbook.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder. I wonder what they're going to. How they're going to, if they're separating that out as well as something that may have been, I wonder what the thinking was, and if they're going to do something, because with so many different systems, you'd have to, it'd be difficult to not include character creation.
Cause I'm struggling. Mm-hmm. I get it. It's a response to Wizard Shenanigans. I totally get it. I get it. I just don't understand long term what it accomplishes. It feels more like almost more like joining a new RPGA association or something,
right?
Like it's more like a friend zone than a mechanical benefit. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I wonder if it is just something that is going to protect, you know, what people have done with 3.5, you know, under the previous OGL and like the iterations on that, so that things like Pathfinder Second Edition are untouchable, you know, by Wizards that can never contest, you know, anything that's that was accomplished with that. So yeah, it's interesting, and things like basic roleplay and Pathfinder being under this, I mean, those aren't new systems, so they have quite a bit of history. So it's funny that they're going to have a new license. So these systems that have been around are going to be under a new license. So yeah, we'll see. And we'll see what people start to kind of find out maybe the problem with this, because it'll come up. I'm sure the community will raise these issues very immediately, probably at Gen Con. So we'll see. And they'll just take away your badge and they'll escort you out if you ask anything too difficult for them to answer.
Oh man, and it's a free event. We couldn't pay me to stay in that line.
Right, oh. Right. Yes. All right, a starter set that was just announced looks fun, and it's nice that we're actually seeing a new version of this game. So Pendragon, the Pendragon starter set is due out June 29th. Oh, no, it is out. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is out. It just came out, so it's been out for about a week, and that's right, the release date was June 29th. So there was a little bit of an interview with one of the line editor, Dave Larkins, and he answered some questions about what you can and can't expect and what this starter set is all about. And if you've had any experience with the previous Chaosium starter sets, both RuneQuest and Call of Cthulhu have really good, are really well done. They offer a solo adventure for the game master to kind of get acquainted with the system and see and get the kind of feel of the game. So that's going to be true of Pendragon as well. So of course Pendragon is built around the legends of the world of King Arthur. Larkins is saying a world full of adventure, danger, and deadly peril, and mystery populated with larger-than-life characters. So in the starter set, you're going to get three books, a tutorial adventure, the rule book, and then a short campaign for three linked scenarios, in addition to several appendices to teach specific rules or aspects of the setting. And then there'll be a set of cards for use with the battle system and a set of dice. And unlike, even though the stats and a lot of the mechanics play like basic role play, you're actually rolling d20s. And so from the original system, it's a d20 system with d6s for other rolls. There'll be 8 pre-generated characters with kind of their special, you know, gatefold character sheets. So you can play right out of the box. And so this may be, we were talking a little bit before the cast about settings that are a little bit intimidating. So this may be one of those as well. You have to give the right feel, you know, to an Arthurian, you know, a game based on Arthurian legend where everyone's playing knights. And if you're not, if that isn't your culture, it may be a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah. And it's not just knights, it's that really romantic chivalric kind of image of knights. I played this game briefly, you know, I want to say in the late 80s. And the things that stuck with me were how you would either be a Christian knight or a pagan knight. And then they had this row. I assume they're going to probably still have this because it was really cool. This row of sort of characteristics or personality modes, and you would rate them, and some were the more what you would expect from a pagan knight, and some were what you would expect from a Christian knight, you know. And that was a really neat, you know, feel. We were too young at the time to appreciate it, but reflecting back on it now, it's like that's really cool. You know, so like I'm just throwing one out here, but I think there was one like along the lines of lustful. You know, so obviously if you're a pagan knight, you're gonna be higher in that,
right?
and lower in what chaste or whatever. And, you know, and as I recall, this could be wrong or it might be changed now. It was sort of a balance, right? So you'd sort of have two poles of a emotion or a sensibility, and you one side you would probably have high, one side you'd probably have low. But yeah, exactly. I was thinking that too, what you said when we were talking about the One Ring before the show started. It's like, that's, you got to have the right group and really buy into the feel of the thing.
Yeah, that's true.
I also wonder if there will be pushback or if there's any like reworking of the game world that they've done. Mm-hmm. Because it was a classic, you know, romantic, chivalric thing. So obviously it was, you know, very male character focused. I think they built some exceptions into that, but I wonder if they're going to even swing that more the other way now. Mm-hmm. You know, just because of the world we live in now,
right,
is different. And
And what the players you have at the table and what they want to do. Yeah, I did see a short discussion on a live stream that Chaosium did previous to the release of this, and they did say there are female knights now in this setting, and they're also doing things like foreign knights. So foreign knights can be Saxon knights or Greek knights. So there will be, you know, from Constantinople, there are, and they kind of give you the feel for that in these pre-generated characters that are offered in the starter set. So character creation is probably a bit different than from the original system. And yeah, that what you said about that, those kind of like, those natures or leanings that the character has that have a balance, that's very similar to how the runes work in RuneQuest, where you, some things can be powered by life or death, but if you level up your death, then you lose something in life. So it's a balance. It's like a spectrum that, you remove things from one side to gain on the other. So it may work very much like that, but I like the fact that informs role play. Whereas in RuneQuest, it informs kind of like your character's nature and what they're capable of doing, but they don't spell out like how that would affect their personality or how they look at the world quite as much as I think something like they may do in Pendragon. So your world outlook and how you, what you worship and what you value will be spelled out in that way. Yeah, traits and passions. That's right. Traits and passions.
There you go.
Yeah.
It needs to be, people have to suspend their disbelief a great deal with anything Arthurian, because the timeline line doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Right, like, right.
You know, the people run around plate mail with lances like 700 years before that was a thing.
Right.
You know, and talking about, I remember, like, I'm pretty sure when we did play, I had a pagan Saxon knight, and chivalry and pagan Saxons. Again, that's like at least 500 years separated.
Right.
You know, 600 years separated. Uh-huh. So yeah.
So definitely a fantasy setting.
Uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, so
that means you should be okay with female knights,
right? And, yeah, hopefully we're not gonna, like, you know, like female space marines. It's not gonna bring up this schism, you know, online that people are gonna fight over. But yeah, it sounds like they did an interesting job in having a broader range. So yeah, they're calling it so. They said, we wanted to present a wide range of characters typical to both of Arthurian tropes, but as well as to demonstrate the diversity of options within broad categories of knights. So we have the would-be chivalrous knights that takes his honor very seriously, a cynical jokester that finds that quite silly, a former maiden who has taken up her father's arms and armor. So they have a lot of ways to kind of lead you in. Country peasants that hope to earn knighthood. So giving you a wider range of how to approach characters. So yeah, it sounds like they're addressing that, and we'll see how effective that works in the world. And if that, for some people, that may break the the game if they have very specific ideas about how this should be played. But the interesting thing that they're saying is the game is highly backwards compatible. So this version of the game will be completely backwards compatible to first edition because it's all Greg Stafford. So you can basically, if you say, I don't like this stuff that you're doing, you're over diversifying or whatever, you can just, you know, consult a previous PDF to get your grognard on.
One of the things about that game that I love to see in games is they emphasized the idea of like generational characters. Like have like a lineage and a house. And they were like one of the first to do anything like that, which is super cool. Like the Game of Thrones RPG actually had a neat system for that too. But you don't see that a lot. That's,
yeah, that's true.
I think they did it before. What was that TSR one? The Birthright or whatever?
Ah, yeah, yeah. So,
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So, it's coming out, and they're talking about the other books that they're going to be producing to support this, and the campaign, the Grey Knight campaign, is going to kind of dovetail nicely with the sword campaign, which is included in the this starter set. And then soon they're going to be offering the Companions of Arthur, the Knight's Handbook, Game Master's Handbook, and the Noble's Handbook. So there'd be a lot of supporting books. So yeah, Chaosium's going to be publishing a lot of books because there still aren't everything for RuneQuest isn't out yet, the latest edition. And I'm sure there's still more Call of Cthulhu to to come. So look forward to a lot of books coming out of Chaosium.
I love Chaosium. Like, I just finished that Game Wizards book, and I didn't realize it at the time, right? The time that all that crap was happening, like in the 80s, I didn't have the sense that, you know, Chaosium was kind of this fairly successful sort of upstart company that TSR pissed on all the time. but they were, and like, the, you know, God bless them for chugging along and still cranking stuff out, you know, and they do actual plays on their YouTube channel now and stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, I don't really watch that stuff, but it's cool that they're very active, I guess is what I'm trying to say. For a company that usually gets referred to as like a second tier company, they're pretty darn successful and they're very active.
Oh yeah. Cool. No, that's very good. Yes. The last kind of the parting comment that the David from Chaosium said is he's a little bit envious of people that will be discovering Pendragon with this release. So the first time Chaosium has launched a new edition of a game line with a starter set. So I guess all the starter sets, of course, you know, RuneQuest and Call of Cthulhu, the starter sets came, you know, decades after the game had been out. So this is a new version with a new starter set that may be your first taste of Pendragon because it hasn't been in print for a while. So
wonderful to see you. This just occurred to me. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder with this and Dragonbane, the way that system works, you know, it's basically a BRP skill base, but converted to 20-sideds.
Right.
You know, I wonder if we'll see like a momentum there. You know, because all these companies, they got to do what they got to do to survive the Wizard's Beast, you know? So maybe if we convert our skill-based percentile game to a skill-based 20-sided game. You know, maybe we'll get a few more people who don't know what those funny 10-sided dice are for.
right. Yeah, that's true. And that's the thing that, so I guess they're going to be doing demos and things at Gen Con and upcoming conventions. And they said that, yes, you can bring your lucky D20 and play Pendragon. So yeah, they're definitely trying to bring some people over that have, you know, maybe 5e is their only game experience.
I just got a 20-sided. Well, I just ordered a 20-sided. This is a stupid purchase. But the 20 side, instead of a 20, it says, fuck you. and instead of the one, it says, fuck me.
Nice.
It was stupid, but I was like, oh, I need one of those.
But it works for roll under or roll over because you can just switch the
yeah, it's all how you look at
it. Nice. All right. And finally, we're in the middle of this. Can you feel this? Like we're in the middle of something grand, like a grand festival or something. Yeah. So the Gloomhaven backer kit campaign for second edition Gloomhaven, the Gloomhaven RPG, a ton of supporting stuff that they previously produced for Frosthaven, a huge amount of miniatures, and now one more addition has been added. One more iteration of the game has now been added to this campaign. So Buttons and Bugs has been revealed as kind of a surprise addition to this campaign. So it has a very interesting origin, and as soon as I saw them announce this, I thought to myself, I hope they're not screwing over this tiny game developer that loves doing micro games. And very fortunately, because this is Cephalofair and it's Isaac Childress, these are I think good guys. Their success their runaway success might be a little bit of a difficulty, like, you know, ego wise eventually, but it seems like they're still pretty down to earth and looking for collaboration and really liking what people do, kind of like reimagining or rethinking their games. So Buttons and Bugs is a micro version of Gloomhaven, and not only physically, so the box is a Gloomhaven game that weighs only about a pound, so that's pretty amazing.
Wow.
Because they're in the 20 to 30 range usually. So this this game is designed for missions that can be played in less than 20 minutes, so about a half hour lunch break, and in a very small form factor. So it's taking all the mechanics and the feel of Gloomhaven and miniaturizing it, but not only the game components themselves, but the gimmick of the game is that your character has been miniaturized by some sort of spell, so that the enemies and things you're going to be facing are going to literally be buttons and bugs because you are miniaturized, and the threats in the world are now on a totally different scale. So it's being offered during this backer kit campaign for only $15. So it's very, very reasonably priced. It'll be $20 thereafter, and probably with online retail that'll come down as well. So it's a solo strategic experience in a tiny box. And basically, where did this idea come from? Why would they think to do something like this? There is a game designer called Joe Klipfel that his YouTube is very interesting because all of his games are played in cards you can hold in your hand. So basically he takes poker size, like regular playing card size cards, and he designs a game so that it can be held in your hand and you can hold your thumb as a placeholder for some stat, and you'd rotate a card and it has another set of tracking on it, and you're flipping through. So a game, a full board game that can be played in a kind of a hand of cards, and the way that he manipulates them is really clever. So he created Gloomholden. So Gloomholden won an award for its design, and it's basically Gloomhaven on 18 cards. So you can have the experience of a Gloomhaven mission, holding these 18 cards in your hand and tracking everything. And if you watch the videos, it's amazing, like how he's come up with this. This way of thinking about mechanics and the way of like tracking things that a board game would usually be responsible for, but you can just do it based on the orientation of cards in your hand, the order of the cards in what you're holding. It's pretty amazing. So both the original designer of Gloomholden, Joe Klipfel, and Nikki Valens. Nikki Valens has worked on Mountains of Madness 2 and Artisans of the Splendent Vale. So they're going to collaborate to flesh this, or I guess they have already collaborated to flesh this all out. And so what originally happened is when he released his 18 card game, the Gloomhaven community got very excited about this, and so that brought it to the attention of the creators. And so instead of just licensing the game from him and just releasing it in that version, they wanted to give it a more thematic experience and have it kind of fit into their world a little bit, instead of just being kind of a fan iteration and a simulation of their game. They decided to, you know, give it a gimmick of miniaturization and have it be a solo play card game. It does have quite a few components, but still doesn't take up a lot of table space. And I do believe, I'll have to look in the components, yes, the only rule that they seem to have broken, which may have been inevitable, because you can't make a tiny bag with tiny tokens in it. So instead of drawing tokens from a little miniaturized bag, there is a die. So there is a die involved in this in a game that is previously known for being all card-based. Yes, yeah. Right. So the components are... For Buttons and Bugs, a 100 cards, 6 micro mercenary miniatures. So there are literally miniatures in the game, probably like 6 millimeter miniatures.
Any excuse to make more miniatures.
Right. 6 dual layer trays that are used for tracking stats on everything. 21 tokens, 10 cubes that actually work in the hexes as enemies. 1 die and 1 hit point dial. So it's still pretty elaborate. There's a lot of tracking. Like, you can't hold this game in one hand, but it does, I think, more closely simulate all of the mechanics that happen in the full Gloomhaven game. So so they were asked, why not simply license Gloomholden and publish this during the campaign? And they said they wanted to change the graphic design and make it more in line with what they've already produced. And Gloomholden had only one character to play, and in this version they wanted to include a good array, not everything, but a good range of their character classes and types, so their ancestries and classes that are involved in the game, so to make it a little bit more closer to a representation of that game. And so it's a very interesting... Yeah, very interesting project. So they are doing a kind of a graphical refresh, and they hired a graphic artist to specifically work on this game. So this game will match Gloomhaven, but maybe have a little bit more of its own look, and probably a little bit more playful, a little more whimsical because of the miniaturized setting, you know. And let's see, the... And the other thing that they wanted to improve in is the game, Gloomholden, the monsters and things were basically stationary. And so you didn't have the strategy and kind of tactical movement of what Gloomhaven is known for. So they wanted to recreate that on a smaller scale. So, it's interesting, really, really interesting approach. And so there was just an update. So they just posted... talking a little bit more about Buttons and Bugs, because they did a quick announcement and included this in their campaign. And so originally Gloomholden, the 18 card version, won the Golden Geek best print and play game. So it's been available since its creation as just a print and play. There's been no, you know, published release or anything, but I think it was very quickly done once it was discovered by the community, probably done with the blessing of Cephalofair, because it was so ingenious. And this game designer has done this with several, I think has iterated these mechanics and kind of applied them to several different game systems and types of settings. So they just went over all of the components and what you're basically getting. So there are Euro mini cards in the game. So I guess, all of the cards are going to be, they're two-sided. So that makes it a little bit more, that doubles the amount of cards you basically have, because there's no backs to the cards. It's whatever side is facing. And they're Euro mini cards. So they're that almost not quite like a half size playing card side. And then, yes.
They like those little... Fantasy Flight, yes. Cards,
right?
The equipment. They always spend their board games for some reason.
Yes, that size. So it's tiny. You got to find tiny little sleeves for your tiny little cards. But there's dashboards and everything for tracking everything, and it looks good. It looks like Gloomhaven. The funny thing is, it just looks like a tiny version of Gloomhaven on the board. And if this design was executed well, that is a pretty, pretty amazing thing. A 20-minute, because Gloomhaven, encounters can run pretty long, because there's a lot of you can get all bogged down in your strategies and everything, and depending on how many players there are, it can be pretty drawn out. So if they do actually have this down to kind of a, and it'll be a little bit more since it's a single player, it's a solo with different scenarios, it will be more of a problem solving. It'll be like, you know, how can I use these abilities to get past this door? It sounds like a fun approach, and it's surprising that they're not just enforcing, and they've always kind of done this. They've always tried to have, because Gloomhaven is an intimidating game just in its size and the length of it, they've had ways to try to onboard people with smaller, you know, things that were set in the world or were a little bit of a simulation of what Gloomhaven was trying to do. And this is that, you know, almost to the extreme, because, yeah, if you can get this game for $15 and play it and say, hey, I kind of like this, this would be really cool to play with a group of people and run through this 100 scenario campaign, then they've got you.
Yeah, I got a friend who is, he invested heavily in Gloomhaven. Mm-hmm. I might end up having to get this once it's retail available for him. Gloomhaven is, it's become like a thing, right? It's like its own thing. It's part of the gaming universe, but it's its own thing. Kind of like Warhammer is and D&D are. You could very easily just live in that game and not participate in other parts of the hobby. You know? it's that big now.
Right.
I like Gloomholden's a great name. Mm-hmm. And since they had to make it more like Gloomhaven, I understand why they didn't go with that name. But Buttons and Bugs, like, it should have been Honey, I Shrunk the Adventurer,
or, you know, right.
Something like that,
right?
But it's cool. I'm glad that they're doing lighter, you know, less serious stuff. You know, that's good.
Yeah, that's true. It may be, and depending on what the illustration and everything looks like, the art direction on it, it may appear to be a little bit more of a kid's version or something. So that may be keeping, if people see it on a shelf, that may, on a shelf in a hobby shop, that may keep them away from it. But it's a funny iteration on things. And I think you're right. They have created this kind of ecosystem that you can, now that there's Frosthaven, and that has the mechanics and everything are a little bit different from that. You're not negotiating this city. You're like trying to support this, the survival of this encampment of people in this like frozen wasteland. They're already kind of giving you different, you know, looks at this world and how you can run things in it. And now that there's an RPG, you know, they're going to be fleshing out a lot more. They're going to have to, you know, explain their various monsters and various, you know, things on the map now have to be more explained if you're going to play, you know, play them as an RPG. So
are they in the orc?
Yeah, right. Oh no, are they? We'll find out.
Probably not.
Yes. And so this is a really interesting campaign. They kind of threw everything out there. So they're doing like 700 miniatures, a new edition of their original game that can't, you know, it's not an update. It's actually like a total revision, total reworking, a 2E basically of their original game. So it's an interesting interesting decision. And like I think we mentioned, it's up to 3 million. Their goal was 2 million. It's up to 3 million. And they're halfway through their 30 days. So, yeah, we'll see if they can double that or where they're actually going to be at.
They're not catching that Avatar game.
Yeah. That's got a very rabid fan base. So, yeah, I think it's I think that's true.
In the RPG sphere, though, do you ever hear about that game? I never hear about that game.
No. So,
like, it made its money and it's out.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, that's a shame, because if they don't support that game, yeah, all the people that bought in and all the people that were excited about it. But then again, if it's got rabid fans, maybe they're like, yeah, whatever. We don't need your we don't need your written stuff. We're going to do our own Avatar world. We've been trying to bend air ourselves for so long, and now we have the mechanics to do it.
There probably are like the Avatar equivalent of the Star Wars fans, right? Doing the, like we said earlier, well, actually,
right,
when Aang was on the glacier, those people are out there. But anyway.
Yes. Yeah, so we'll see how this Grand Festival proceeds. They they don't stop. I mean, literally every day or every other day, there's an actual play. There's a how it's played. There's a panel. Like, they're really, really heavily supporting this campaign and trying to give people as much information as possible. And the actual plays for the TTRPG have varied from incredibly polished, voice actor casted, annoying, you know, kind of convention based with multiple cameras to, like, basically Isaac with his D&D buddies from high school playing it together on just webcams. So it's really interesting that how they're trying to catch everybody in the kind of, you know, media they want to see things in, because, you know, some people like those instructional, how it's played kind of videos. So all the board games are getting that treatment ahead of time. And it seems like they worked with a lot of, you know, creators, tabletop creators, and got them advanced copies and let them play, because someone even said, I have played through the entire, you know, campaign of this second edition and it's great. And I was like, okay, wow. So they've gotten it out there and they've had people playtesting it for a while now.
Wow.
So yes, it's quite an operation they have going here. And one thing, so it keeps reminding me, watching the actual plays and how they have to keep referring to the board and keep counting squares and things, did make me think that I wonder if the people that, you know, either never had access to 4E or liked 4E, but it never caught on. So it was kind of like, you know, Wizards moved on from it a little more quickly than they would have otherwise. But a heavy tactical element in an RPG. So now that they have a Gloomhaven tabletop RPG, you have that. You have to get behind them. You have to be you have to be exactly, you know, 15 feet or whatever away for this thing to work. And so that may be satisfying some people that, you know, liked 4E yeah. or liked that style of game and wish there was something. And now they have an original setting with interesting. I mean, you can see like inspiration from various things. There's character, you know, classes that are obviously like a rogue, but they're not, you know, they're not so straightforward. It's a mind thief. It's like a psychic rogue that can, like, you know, create illusions and also stab you in the back, you know? So there's, really interesting, you know, takes on this world. So it feels original enough that you don't see yourself. It doesn't seem like it's just another 5E mm-hmm. Kind of setting. Right. So yeah, so we'll see what other surprises they have. They still have two more weeks to thrill us and get us to put our money down.
Yeah, Party City was out of the pennant, so I didn't put up any pennants or balloons. Sorry.
Oh no, it's okay. I'll have my costume ready probably by the last week of the. Yeah, it's funny, and I think the only weakness that I've seen so far. Is there's not a lot of stuff that if you don't support this backer kit, you're going to miss out on. I mean, the pricing, I think, especially for like living like expats and people living in very inconvenient countries, they benefit from this by having the best possible shipping and the lowest possible price for the game if they support this. But all of this stuff is going to go to retail. You know, they really, yeah, they have stuff out there. So everything that they're releasing will eventually get a retail release with, you know, not the worst price. You know, you're saving a bit, but not the worst price. So, yeah, they haven't quite. I guess for the RPG, maybe that deluxe set that they're going to do with everything included in its fancy little box, maybe that is, you know, campaign only. But other than that, I haven't seen anything that, you know, won't be available after the fact. And that's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing that, you know, crowdfunding leans heavily on. So it's good that they're not. And also that means they're not going after Gloomhaven whales, where, you know, where they're like exotic wood, hand carved, you know, things that are going to make people put down thousands of dollars. Yeah. Just to play a board game. Yes.
But that just supports my theory that they're so big now that, you know, they can do, they don't have to do that silliness, you know.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes. But, yeah, so we'll see how things progress. Yeah, so Buttons and Bugs. A tiny little game, a tiny little version of a gigantic board game. That's cool. But, yeah, I thought the origin was particularly interesting.
That is cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to do it for this week. So, wait.
Where's our Brink Watch?
Oh, hey, let's get an update quickly. Yes. So either, So Brinkwatch 2023, day 167. So hashtag resign Kyle. So Kyle told three black halflings that he would be stepping away from the hobby because all white men should be doing this because they're boring and they've been here too long and we need fresh ideas and new blood. So step down, Kyle. So we'll see how long this persists. I think he's going
to... Part of the problem, Kyle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Lead by example. Just walk away from the tabletop industry. Oh, man. That's brutal. Thank you for reminding me. All right. So where can people find you? Is there something that you'd like people to check out?
Well, now you can find me on Threads.
Excellent.
It's still at Hargald, H-A-R-G-A-L-D. Works on Twitter for now. Mm-hmm. Threads, Instagram. Threads, I'm strongly, if you're not on Twitter and you've always avoided Twitter, this is a pretty good time to get kind of a Twitter experience without as much hate and fire and
nice.
And threats. There's a really neat thing happening. I talked to Jeremy about this earlier, but people are searching out their communities on Threads because it is new. Mm-hmm. So the TTRPG people are looking actively for people to follow who want to talk about that. Same for the wargamers and the painters. Nice. And the YouTube gaming content people. Everyone's just sort of being cool and reaching out right now. So mm-hmm. it's probably the best possible time to get a Twitter experience without the crappy part of Twitter.
Right, right. <Yeah. laughs> Nice. Yeah, I'll put a link to your Threads account and so people can find that. And yeah, if you want to talk tabletop, that was a good... good place to start. Yeah, because I saw on Twitter you kind of put out a call to some of your favorite personalities and publishers and things. So, you know, get on Threads. So, yeah.
Yeah, including you, sir.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yes. Yeah. So there will be an Upturntable Threads account coming soon. And especially if we can stream to it, that would be great if they get that going. Just another place to catch the weekly.
Oh, and I'm printing my final... proof copy of the session Forbidden Lands session zero.
Oh, excellent. Oh, very good.
Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So that should be going up hopefully on drive-through by the weekend.
Excellent. Very good.
So for people listening, Jeremy did the art for that and the layout was driving me flipping nuts.
Oh, but
once I put in Jeremy's art, I felt so much better about the layout.
Oh,
so,
good.
So I'm looking forward to getting that up. I mean, it's not a perfect system, but I think it's a fun idea.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And it's going to be cheap, so you check it out.
Nice. Yeah, we'll put a link to that. Definitely. Yeah, definitely check out Matt's. And you've got previous postings on DriveThru. So I'll just put a link to basically you on DriveThru. I think that'll be a good way to find everything because the Twilight 2000. Ooh. Yeah.
So what's going on in Jeremy's world?
Oh, yes. So I'm still doing my single panel gag cartoon. So Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch. So you can watch me basically draw the cartoon two every week. And it's a single panel gag cartoon. So like an image and a joke underneath. And I also eat various odd things from Japanese convenience stores. So we talk a little bit of Japanese culture and travel and stuff here. And little culture shock kind of stuff. So that is abusecartoons.com and then Abuse Cartoons on all social media. And if you want to support what we're doing here on the weekly, and actually we have a very important thank you. We finally have a weekling. So the weekling, I try to separate all of the tiers on the Patreon by, you know, what you want to suggest to be supporting. But basically that's not a very effective way to go about doing it, but we have our first weakling on Upturned Tables Patreon. So I'd like a big thank you. Where are we going? Oh wait, I'm not logged in as a creator anymore. A big thank you to, I'm sorry, I didn't have a graphic ready for this. Come on. Sorry. I'm really
fix it in post.
Yes, yes, fix this in post. Fix it in post. That's why we shouldn't be doing this on live streams. But thank you to I'm trying to get the name. Sorry. So our latest
ad, I go to the Patreon app, will I see it? Or?
No, it's not. Yeah, it's weird how I'm not getting a list of anything. Oh, here we go. Let's try notifications. There we go. So Silgo. So Silgo, thank you so much. I saw some comments. Silgo commented on a few of the actual plays that we have posted on the channel and supported us on the Patreon as a weakling. So our first weakling level tier. So thank you, Silgo. And you deserve a graphic with confetti and fireworks and everything. But I appreciate the support very much. And if you'd like to become a weakling or support us on another level, patreon.com/upturntable. And that'll be a good way to get in touch with us, let us know what you want to see on the weekly. And as we get more and more evolved, it'll probably be the best way to see what we're doing as far as the raw stream for actual plays and things like that, as well as sharing what we're up to in all realms of Upturn Table. And currently, so we're kind of doing a Christmas in July. Back in last December, I read through all of In Lunacy, the first volume of the Mutant Chronicles trilogy of the Apostle of Insanity trilogy. So now we're in the middle of Frenzy, or we just started. We're in the third chapter of Frenzy. So we're doing kind of an audiobook presentation of Frenzy just so you can have some dieselpunk to listen to before bed every night. So a chapter a night every night for all of July. But this book is a little short. There's only 20 chapters, so I think we'll finish it before the end of the month. Our gimmick last time was an advent calendar, so there was a chapter every day before Christmas. But I figured let's get back to it and finish up this trilogy. So we'll do Frenzy in July, and then we'll do the third volume for next Christmas. And for some reason, it's much more fun to read it at Christmas time because it's cold and you're drinking hot tea and you're snuggled in, and it's a little easier to do this stuff when you're sweating and the air conditioning is drying out your throat. It's a little harder to read. So I didn't do this as a live stream this time. It's actually, I pre-recorded it so I could fix my my throat clearings and my mispronunciations. So it's a little cleaner. It's a little cleaner presentation. So check that out on Upturn Table on YouTube, and it'll stream on all of the platforms that it'll be posted to all the platforms. So there'll be a early Patreon version every night, and then YouTube, it'll get a premiere. Each chapter gets its little premiere. So join us there. And thank you for joining us. We'll do this again next week, and who knows, July might be a pretty rocky rocky schedule for Chris. So possibly without Chris, we'll see how it goes. But thank you, Matt, so much for filling in. It's great to have someone to discuss things with instead of just doing a monologue. So thank you so much, and we'll be back again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.